Coming up, the Knights of Soken podcast, your favorite source for Star Wars and gaming debate, starts now.
Y'all, it's the Soken Community Podcast, Season 3, Episode 10, Happy Trails. This is Blue, and I'm here with our host, Roz Winters.
What's up?
And Jace Drayson.
Blue Drayson!
Wait, something was wrong with that. Let's try it again.
I'm noticing everybody's name has Drayson on it this evening in the team speak.
No, it doesn't. Mine says Abram, clearly.
Yeah, well, are you going to be Roz Abram now?
No, never, but I will shout out to Mullen every day, so... I'll never be Team Drayson, Team Abram.
I think it's legal for y'all to be married, so you could do that now. I've got a harem going on though with all the Draysons.
I don't know how my wife would like it, but
it's the new generation. She'll deal.
Well, it's been a busy week for the Lords. Lots of new events going on and a ton of new promotions. What's been going on with the Knights?
It's been a busy week over on Nightside. Always is. Probably our biggest thing that's going on most of the time is Academy. That's our steady, I always plug it every week. That's our steady events that are just always rolling.
Academy and specs are always there, doing new storylines, new events each week, so always like to plug those too. But yeah, like Jay said, Academy is probably our most popular event right now.
Sentinels has been blowing up. I will put a little plug in there for the Sentinels. I've been seeing a whole lot of activity in their team speak. And all of their events are very well attended, so that's pretty cool.
You'll know that because you're the only council member that gets invited to them, so...
It's pretty cool, that's right. I went to a Sentinel banquet this week. I think I was invited and no one else was, so you're welcome.
This week's show is going to be really cool. We're going to review ARK Survival Evolved. We're going to also discuss the new Rogue One trailer that came out just a couple weeks ago. As well as the news that the original trilogy is going to be back in theaters, and discuss midichlorians.
I was never a big fan of midichlorians. I'm just going to come right out and say it. That's probably spoiler alert for the rest of the episode, but...
To say you're not a big fan, that's like slapping a lot of people in the face.
Oh, nobody thought midichlorians were cool, Roz.
Oh.
Nobody? Really?
Nobody.
That's a huge statement.
Except maybe sure? George Lucas, and he was on like Quaaludes or something.
Okay.
We'll save it.
We'll save it for the next one. Let's get on with the show. Rogue One is scheduled to be out this December, and the first teaser trailer came out a couple days ago, and it was definitely a tease. Critics have said that the trailer shows a lackluster film that's unable to grasp the iconic Star Wars feel. Do you guys think that the trailer, or that the movie, is just something thrown at the fans to tide them over until Episode 8 comes out?
Meh, sure, maybe. I don't know. I think I agree with the critical review of it not capturing Star Wars though. And a movie like this is always going to have that possibility, because when Star Wars, we're talking about the light and the dark, right? So when you're going with a movie that has nothing to do with the Jedi and the Sith, it's going to be hard for it to feel like it's Star Wars. I think that criticism is probably 100% spot on.
Well, that's... we don't know if it's not going to have anything to do with Jedi and Sith or with the Force. My assumption would be that there'll have to be some type of undertone. There is that little tiny scene that gives you the hint that perhaps there's some connection with the Emperor and Darth Vader. I mean, we know in this time period they're around. And I don't know how much more Star Wars-y a trailer could be. It had AT-ATs, it had a Death Star, it had Stormtroopers, it had Mon Mothma. I mean, that's pretty classic Star Wars.
Sure, I get. Yeah, but like I said before, when you like completely leave out the aspect of the Force and the Jedi, the training of the Jedi, the training of the Sith, or even the beacon of hope that the Jedi is in this time area with Luke, like, it's going to be hard to capture what a true Star Wars fan thinks of. Because, I mean, maybe you and I, ones who have looked into the Star Wars universe, we know about all this. But, people who just generally talk about Star Wars, lightsabers, Jedi, Sith, that's all they know. That's all they care about. So when you don't see a lot of that thrown around in this trailer, you're like, man, I don't really care. I'm excited personally, but I bet there's a lot of people out there that aren't.
I don't know. I think that when you go back to the original Star Wars, 1977 Star Wars, there was barely a blip on the radar about Jedi. There was nothing really. The Force was just that mystical energy field that Obi-Wan Kenobi talked about for like two scenes out of the movie. The rest of it was about flying X-Wings, blowing up Death Stars, escaping from, you know, trash pits. It was an adventure movie. That had little to nothing to do with the Force. Now, don't get me wrong. I am all for making sure that, you know, that grand story of light versus dark is in there somewhere. But to say that without a lightsaber, it doesn't feel Star Wars is just kind of... Star Wars, the movie Star Wars, wasn't about lightsabers and wasn't about Jedi.
You may be right, right? And I understand that. But my point is the general population probably doesn't get that. And
well, hold on. The general population of younger people, maybe.
Right.
But the general population of people that are, you know, I'd say 40 and up, which is a big chunk of the Star Wars fan base, they do get that.
Well, but you see, and even back to the point you were making about there not being really Jedi, I mean, obviously Luke was probably the only remaining Jedi with Obi-Wan and Yoda, obviously in the older age, but the Sith were present, for sure. I mean, Vader was in almost, was in every movie and was a big part of every movie, and so was the Emperor himself. So, I mean, the Sith were there. So, the Force was there. But, I mean, Vader was Force choking everybody throughout the whole movie.
And we very well could see a Force choker, too. We don't know if there's going to be a cameo by Darth Vader or not.
So, I mean, I'm excited. I think that it will be hard to grasp. It could be hard to grasp the Star Wars feel. But, I mean, they're going to give it a shot, that's for sure.
What excited you guys the most about the trailer?
Oddly enough, okay, so there's the scene where it looks like maybe a Star Destroyer is flying across a starfield, just, you know, slowly drifting. But then you realize that it's a shadow moving. The starfield isn't a starfield at all. It's a shadow moving across the face of the Death Star, and it's a teeny tiny little Star Destroyer, and the dish is retracting back into the Death Star. That, to me, was really cool because, I mean, that's a new thing. Nobody knew that dish could poke out like that. I'm interested in protrusions.
Or what it does, or what the purpose for being out even was at all. Like, who knows? You have to watch the movie to find out. I think to me, what excited me the most about the trailer is the characters that they kind of snuck in there, right? Just here and there. And you don't really know them. You want to know their backstory. You want to know who is this person. So to me, just seeing the potential of all these characters and what they could play in the movie, that's what's exciting me the most.
What about all of the names attached to the project, like Forrest Whitaker and Mads Mikkelsen, Alan Tudyk? That exciting to you at all?
No, I don't care. As long as it's a well-written Star Wars tale, I could give a crap about who's signed on to the movie. I think one of the smartest things that they did with The Force Awakens was sign virtual unknowns to the title. Well, not totally unknowns. I mean, you've got people that are relatively unknown actors. They're not A-listers, I'll put it like that. I think once you start to attach A-list names to a brand or an IP, it's a slippery slope. I really want to see somebody that I don't have a lot of connotation with.
Jason didn't hold anything back. He just came out there and put his feelings out on blast.
Well, that's what I do.
Well, no, but oddly enough, I agree with what he's saying, right? So when you start assigning people that everybody knows in movies like this, one of two things happens. Either A, you only associate that person with these films from now on, or you can't see that person as the character they're trying to portray because you only know them as whatever they were before. So I'm with Jace on that too. You want kind of randoms, almost random people that you've never really heard of. Bring them in. Let this be their thing.
So who do you think the Grand Admiral is?
Well, we know it's not Thrawn because he ain't blue. But
not necessarily true. It could be Thrawn. Well, this could be redoing the version. I mean, Thrawn is not canonized at all.
No, that's true. Well, he's Legends.
So this could be Thrawn, just redone completely.
I think that that'd be a really poor notion. If you're going to recreate a character, you should at least keep some certain pieces out. Otherwise, why even name him that? I mean, it's kind of dumb. They could just come up with another name.
No, they could have. From what you know about Thrawn and the way that his character was designed, I think it is Thrawn. I think they're gonna redo him. They're gonna make him a human, which, okay, that's. I don't see why you wouldn't just keep him. You know, keep him. I think it was Chiss, right? I believe it was Chiss.
Yeah, Chiss.
Keep him as Chiss. Like I don't understand why to change his race. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But I think it's Thrawn.
I will say that because it takes a lot of patience and time to turn somebody blue.
Oh, please, Blue. How ironic that you should say such a thing
right.
with your name.
Blue talking about somebody turning blue.
They, please, makeup. People are used to sitting in makeup chairs for hours and hours on end when they're in movies that are sci-fi-ish. I don't think that would have been what held them back. I think that probably... What's weird is that you know it's a Grand Admiral because of the uniform, and you know right. the uniform's a Grand Admiral uniform because of the artwork surrounding Grand Admiral Thrawn. So that's kind of weird. So I like that they stuck with the, I guess, the thread of continuity there, but I honestly don't think it's Thrawn, and if it is, I'm going to be kind of disappointed.
Even if they don't call him Thrawn, we may as well say that this person is probably Thrawn as a human with a different name, if that makes sense.
But well, I don't know that. I mean, Thrawn had a lot of very specific things about him that were very cool to the character, and if they rip off those pieces, for instance, he knew about his enemies because he would study their art. Right. He would study the art of the culture or whatever. If that's something that this dude does, I'm gonna be disappointed because then that kind of limits the fact that Thrawn would ever come around. I know that there's this big campaign, this big push to put Grand Admiral Thrawn into the Rebels series. There's a Twitter campaign and a letter writing campaign or something. So that would take the steam out of that completely.
I mean, not necessarily. It would just probably be this character as Thrawn that they would put into the Rebels series versus the one you've seen in Legends.
Which would make people mad. They want the blue skin and the red eyes, I'm telling you.
Well, see, and this is my thought, if it is Thrawn, why it wouldn't necessarily be played as a Chiss is because, I mean, I don't know that you've ever seen a Chiss being played on the big screen before, right? So that may be something that you know, Star Wars developers and producers are like, eh, we don't really want to touch that one right now. I don't know. It's possible.
So, you know, we have to touch on who was in that Bacta tank that we saw.
Right, and that was our biggest hint that there will be some type of Force connection to the movie. We don't know much of anything about the villain that our main character, I can't think of the character's name, is going to be, who she's going to be going up against. However, there are Imperial guards on flanking the dang Bacta tank or whatever it is, and a hooded, cloaked figure kneeling before it, and it really did kind of bring back the imagery from like Empire Strikes Back when Darth Vader kneels before the Emperor. So could be.
I don't see who else it probably could be with the Royal Guard there and everything. It's definitely Vader kneeling to the Emperor. I don't know if it's a Bacta tank. I mean, on second look, maybe it's not a Bacta tank. Maybe it's a hollow of some sort. So that's interesting, but I mean, for the Royal Guard to be there and it to be a hollow doesn't really make a lot of sense. But
it looks a little cryo to me, a little more cryo than Bacta.
Maybe cryo than Bacta. It's interesting. What is he? I think it's for sure Vader, but what is he kneeling? What's before him? I'm interested. That's probably. I said that before. The characters have me excited, but I think this has me the most intrigued. I think it's so far the biggest reason I want to see the movie, just because of that little clip.
Well, someone mentioned something about it being Snoke. What do you guys think of that?
Could be. They've got to tie him into the background of the Star Wars universe somewhere, and what better way if you're going back in time to be able to tie this character somehow and make a connection that matters into the future? Because unless they reveal that Snoke is somebody that we already know in the Star Wars universe or in the films, then he's out of left field. Would be a really easy way to plant him into the history.
There's a big theory going around that it could be Snoke. I myself was one that plugged that it might be Snoke, and I think someone alluded to the fact earlier that this movie could be a time filler till Episode 8 come in, which if that is the case and that's what they're really having this movie become, then having this be Snoke and this be his way to tie him into the next movie, that's a good way to make this movie a good time filler, because obviously everybody wants to know more about Snoke. Who is he? Where did he come from? Why is he here? The list goes on. So if this movie is just a quote-unquote filler, I mean, that's a good way to have it be a filler.
How could you say any Star Wars movie period is filler or a time filler or a space filler? There's just no way. It's Star Wars, for God's sake, and it is going to have iconic Star Wars imagery. It's going to have X-Wings, and it's not going to have our characters that we know and love, but it's going to introduce us to new characters that we probably will know and love, although I'm not super interested in the lead so far. just have to put that as an aside. She doesn't seem that interesting. She seems little cliche and full of tropes.
Yeah, kind of gives that bratish kitty vibe, which is, I mean, I don't know the character. I haven't really, you know, I haven't gotten to see what she's supposed to be portraying. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And I think you are right. I mean, I don't think it is quote filler, but there are people out there who believe that, which to me is kind of silly, because even if it is filler, it's Star Wars. I mean, I want to know who these people are. I mean, just because it's Rogue One, it's got to tie into the other episodes somehow. I think it has to find a way to intertwine, and I think they will.
Okay, so the movie comes out in December, and I'm sure we'll be seeing more teases in the future, and we'll be talking about them on this podcast. The original trilogy is back. The movie will be returning to the big screen this summer in 20 cities. What do you guys think? Why do you think Disney is bringing it back now?
Well, I mean, isn't it less Disney and more Alamo Drafthouse? I mean, isn't that kind of the shtick on this?
I don't know. Doesn't it? I don't think that's the question. To me, I think the question is, does it matter who's bringing it back? They're bringing it back to me for one reason, and one reason only, because it's going to make money. I don't know. That's just the way I see it, right? You release the episode 7, and now you're coming out with another Rogue One movie, and then what's going to happen? People are going to release these again. All the old Star Wars fans are going to want to go see it redigitally, remasterized, and all that nonsense. And it's going to just the box office is going to be crazy.
Well, I mean, it can't be too crazy, because like I said, I think it's just Alamo Drafthouse. Could our researchers look into that? Alamo Drafthouse is known for bringing back having events centered around bringing back a movie. So I love the Alamo Drafthouse, by the way. There are like 5 of them within 2 hours driving distance of me in any direction. It's probably one of my favorite things to do on a weekend, on a long weekend, is go spend some time. They do sing-alongs, they have food and booze, and it's a really fun experience. Alamo Drafthouse is going to make bank on it. What I'm wondering is how much they had to spend for the rights to do it. A shit ton, I bet.
Maybe not so much, though. Maybe not given the current state of the Star Wars, like how big Star Wars is right now. You know, it could have been an easy plug for them to, you know, obviously it was not cheap, for sure, but I don't know if maybe as much as it might have been before the release of Episode 7.
Yeah, that's true. And licensing is a lot different now that Disney has it than it was when Lucas has it. Lucas was very, very, I guess, careful with licensing, and Disney's like, sure, put Star Wars on anything.
Star Wars, nah. But yeah, like I said, I think that it's whoever is doing it, right? The biggest reason they're going to do it is because it's going to make them money. Even I still would say, even if they had to pay a decent amount to get, you know, the license to do it, I think they're going to take in almost double from the income on it. That's just me.
Is this a good way to introduce the original trilogy for those who didn't grow up with it?
Well, at this point, we're not talking about that many people, because wasn't there like a re-release with, like, when Lucas remastered the trilogy in like the 90s? So there was the whole 90s generation got it. The 70s, 80s got it, then the 90s, 2000s got it. So we're really to the really young kids that'll get their first theater experience with Star Wars. So yeah, absolutely, I think it's going to reignite. But one thing that worries me is that the pacing of old movies never tends to go over well with young audiences. They don't have the attention span for it.
Well, it's a different type of film, right? So in the 1970s, you know, the biggest part of the movie was the story, right? It wasn't so much graphics and art and the flair and all of this this creativity that brings the movie to life. It was the story was the main focus of the film. So like Jace was saying, these, you know, younger generations that maybe are watching the movies for the first time may not become so sucked into the story and may wonder, where's the flair? Where's all of this, you know, Transformer-like graphics and special effects that I'm not getting, and the story might go by the wayside. But to get back to the subject or the actual question, I do think this will be a good way to bring the movie back to some of the younger generation, or those just who may have never gotten into Star Wars before. Yes, they did bring the movies out on DVD, but I mean, I don't know. To me, there's something about going and seeing a movie live, you know, in a theater on a big screen with popcorn and sitting down and really getting into it. I get into a movie much more like that than if I've just got to plug a DVD in my Xbox or whatever I watch a DVD on and then sit down and watch it.
Roz, you've ever been to an Alamo Drafthouse before?
I haven't, actually.
So the deal is, there's like, you have a bar in front of you at every level, and then waiters come through, and you can get a full meal. You can get, like, desserts and booze the whole time. So they're coming throughout the movie giving you food, It's like, you could spend hundreds of dollars. It's really easy to spend a lot of money at one of these places. But it's really cool, now, too, because they build events around it. Like, between the movies, they usually have some type of, whether it's a sing-along or contests or dress-up, costume contests. It's a whole cultural experience to go to these Alamo Drafthouse events.
And you're going to get 4, 5, and 6 at the same sitting, I believe, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's like an event, like a trilogy event.
That would be a little bit more worth it. I'm talking as far as the money you have to pay for this event. You know, if you're gonna be sitting there for, you know, oh Jesus, 6, 7, 8 hours plus. Yeah, I mean, yeah, obviously you're gonna want some entertainment, some food, something else besides just the movie.
I don't know if I could take it, to be perfectly honest.
I could. I don't know if that's the question. I could definitely sit down and watch all three movies, especially if I had brought someone, like, for instance, my wife, who hasn't maybe not seen the movies, but maybe once and didn't pay attention to them, and she could really get into it, and we could talk about the movies, and I could say this is what's happening and why it's happening. Then I think I could really get into it.
Are you guys going to do it then?
I guess.
If I can get a group together, some buddies, I can see myself doing it. If it's just me, probably not. I'd need at least a group of about 6 to 8 people.
I'm with Jason. I think I would need a group of people. And also, obviously now I need to know if there's one near me, which I'm in San Diego, so I'm sure that there freaking is. But then also, that's a lot of time. You know, you're talking, I mean, at least 8 hours, right, Jason?
Yeah,
I mean,
you've given up a day, pretty much.
Yeah, that's a whole day worth of an event. So you need to clear your calendar if you plan on going to see that one.
I had a buddy who went to see, who went to an all-day screening of the trilogy, of all the trilogies, both trilogies, and then The Force Awakens. So it was like 6 movies, and the 7th one was the opening of Force Awakens. He said he had to be there at like 4 in the morning, and it was like an all-day thing. I could not have done that. I'm sorry, I can't do it.
My butt hurts just thinking about how much sitting I had to do to watch all those movies right now.
Hubba.
Well, I know I'm going to go. My parents' first date was actually Return of the Jedi, so it's kind of nostalgia for me.
Look at that. Blue was a Jedi baby.
You were conceived in the back of the theater.
I don't know about that, and I don't want to think about that either, so we're going to leave that alone, and we're going to move on.
Enjoying today's show? Interested in joining the Knights of SoCan? If these apply to you, please visit us at www.knightsofsoken.com and click the apply button above. Also, feel free to send a comment our way on Twitter at Knights of SoCan, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/Knights of SoCan. Now, back to our show.
The concept of midichlorians was first introduced in The Phantom Menace to explain why some creatures were Force-sensitive and others were not. For those of you who may not know, Jace, Roz, tell us what they are and how they came about.
They came about when George Lucas was on an acid trip, when he decided that he needed to put science to his epic space opera.
Oh, no. God.
What they are little creatures that live inside of your cells. And they speak to the Force. And the more that you have in your cells, the more Force potential that you have in your body.
As Jace talks about midichlorians, I can literally feel the little vein in producer Mullen's neck just throbbing as he's getting more angry.
Throbbing.
No, but yeah, for sure. So like Jace said, basically midichlorians were worth a... How do you say a small being inside of everything, every living aspect that would allow one to harness the Force.
And how do you feel about the subject of midichlorians?
Oh, we get to talk about our feelings? Because I'm going to have to get some graham crackers out because I'm going to have to eat my feelings.
Oh,
okay, here's the tea. Here's the tea for me. I feel like leaving the Force as a mystical energy field that was more, you know, divine or more magical, it left the saga more in the era, in the genre that it was supposed to be, more fantasy. By putting these little creatures inside of cells that increase potential for the Force, it suddenly stops being fantasy and crosses over into science fiction. Science fiction tries to give reasons for things. Fantasy doesn't necessarily have to. So I think that was an unnecessary cross. I feel like it was like adding a layer of intellectualism or something that just didn't need to be there personally. I liked not knowing what the Force was. I liked not knowing how certain beings could connect with the Force or not.
See, and I don't know. I really disagree. So I think the Midichlorians being implemented were great, and the reason being is because I'm not a fan of not knowing how in the world someone uses the Force, right? So in theory, what you believed in was that someone, a normal person like me and you, would just be able to pick their hand up and move something to them, right? For no unexplainable reason, it just happens. So to have the Midichlorians in there to be a legit reason as to why, let's say Mullen could do it, but I can't, right? That is what I like. That's because that brings a real factor into the movie.
So because you have an organelle in your cells, you have a higher number of organelles in your cells, suddenly you're telekinetic. That gives you enough reason and understanding instead of making it more foggy and weird.
How does it make it more foggy or more weird? That doesn't make any sense to me, right? Because now you're giving me a distinct reason as to why I can do it versus saying, well, he can do it and you can't. Suck it. That's it.
But it's like not a real reason. It's like saying I can do it because I've got blonde hair. There's no connection to the outcome. There's no really place for to give cause and effect there. There's what is the connection to the Force that the midichlorians have? There's no real explanation for that. It's simply that if you have more midichlorians per cell, then you have a higher connection to the Force. But the Force is still a mystical energy field that binds us all together. There's really no... I just don't understand the correlation.
To me it's simple, right? Midichlorians live within all living things, right? You're upsetting my daughter. She's here in the background. She's upset. No, but midichlorians live within all living things, right? So we're talking about the living Force. One can actually harness the living things through midichlorians. I mean, I don't see how that doesn't bring a real factor to you.
They're a mediator between the Force and rest of us, basically.
But it's an unnecessary mediary. Their connection to the Force is just as metaphysical as Luke's was without them. There's still that jump you have to make. All you did was take it from a macro connection to a micro connection. There's still no explanation for the magic that happens.
To me, I don't think there needs to be an explanation for the magic that happens.
That's my point.
But I think there has to be something that says this is the reason why Jedi can do it, but A normal citizen cannot.
Well, personally, that's a little bit of a flip-flop from where George Lucas was, you know, in the olden days. In the olden days, he said anybody could be a Jedi if you took the time to do it. When he was having the conversations with Lawrence Kasdan about Empire Strikes Back, he said that it's like yoga. If you practice it, you can do it. Jedi are people who practiced.
George Lucas has also said that he had the idea for midichlorians back in 1977. You mean 77? Sorry.
He did say that. I would like to see documentation on it, because his every piece of commentary he had between 77 and before when the prequels came out didn't really make that known. There was nothing that signifies that.
It's hard to take what Lucas says as when he talks in an interview as like I don't know if it's necessarily true, but as believable all the time, because he does flip-flop a lot, and you know that.
I do.
You know.
Yes, he absolutely does.
But I will say that there are, when you're talking about midichlorians, it does get a little hairy, because you're talking, like Jay said, the Force is mystical, and you don't know how it works and everything. But I think when you don't have something there like midichlorians to say, well, this is for sure why Anakin can do these things as a child, right? Versus just any other child walking around the planet of Tatooine. So to me, when you're watching the movie, I was like, oh, now I get it. Now I know why Anakin can do it.
See, as soon as they said that on episode one, I made a face like something stunk. It did not explain anything to me. It was like, what? Huh? That's how I felt about it.
But you were intrigued, because now you were like, oh man, so there's this whole new thing that just ties all of this together.
It didn't tie anything together for me. It untied things for me. But having said that, I was a very big reader of the Expanded Universe before episode one came out. So to me, I had, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of words of the Force without a mitochondrion, midichlorian, whatever, you know, put into the mix.
So I would, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think for you, it's not necessarily that you don't like midichlorians, you just... you were so used to a Star Wars universe that didn't have them or didn't know anything about them.
I think they're unnecessary for the story to take place. I think that they're a piece of exposition, and I don't like exposition. Show me, don't tell me. That's the main my main thing about whether it's theater, whether it's film, whether it's a book. Show me, don't tell me. And midichlorians is a big fat tell. It was a cheat that George Lucas threw in to say, oh, this guy's super great because he's got let's say thousands of these little freaking creatures in his blood that make him super duper powerful. It's corny to me.
It was 20,000, and if you're per cell, and if you're referring to Anakin, which I'm thinking that you were, he was the chosen one, Jace. He needed something that made you believe that this guy was the greatest Jedi that ever existed.
But I need you to show me, don't tell me. I don't need you to tell me he's great by saying, oh, we tested him and he's great. Show me he's great. They could have done it in a thousand different ways, and in some ways they did. I mean, he won the pod race. He was an able pilot. He had, you know, possibly Mechaderu coursing through his veins, maybe whatever. But it was a worthless bit of exposition to the story.
So I have to make sure that this is clear, right? To take these movies are an hour and a half long, Jace. So they, when you said they did show you, that's the time that they had allotted to show you. So when they told you about his midichlorians, that was making up for all the time that they didn't have to show you.
It's lazy storytelling. That's all. That's the bottom line for me.
So given that George Lucas claims that he had the idea back when he was originally writing the movies, but it didn't come out until he was doing the prequels, do midichlorians really matter to the galaxy, and does it affect the overall story in any way, shape, or form?
Absolutely not, and I think that the remainder of the Star Wars universe as it unfolds through Disney will show that. I don't think we're going to hear about midichlorians ever again, personally.
I can't speak for the future. I don't know if we're ever going to hear it again, but I think that you will hear it again sooner or later. I think they'll talk to you about Kylo's midichlorians. I think you may actually hear it in the next episode. That's just me. But to say that is it relevant in the universe? Yes, it's relevant. Of course it is. I'm actually a little upset to me that it took so long for Lucas to bring it out with Anakin, because I wanted to know. I personally want to know what Luke's midichlorian count was.
Who cares? I mean, like, to me, it's just such an irrelevant. It doesn't have anything to do with anything. It's a piece of information that's thrown in for the simple fact to connect a dot that didn't need connecting. We already knew Luke was a great Jedi.
But see, you are assuming that it didn't need connected, but there's a lot of people out there who don't like the idea of the Force being this just unexplainable ability that only certain people can use. Some people need a real factor and to relate it to something.
I think that if you polled Star Wars fans of the original trilogy, by and large, they would poo-poo the notion of midichlorians.
So I think I know how Jace feels about this next, or I think I know Jace's answer, but I'm going to ask this question anyway. Do you think that we could have done without midichlorians being mentioned ever?
Duh.
No way. There's no way you could have went without it being mentioned ever. It's because, and this is the only thing I agree at all with what Jace has said, but because they didn't really get enough to show you why Anakin was so good, they needed that little bit of information to tell you that he was that good.
All it would have taken for me was for Qui-Gon to close his eyes, hold out his hand, and say something about his aura or something about the waves of the Force coming off of him.
So you're a hippie,
or his connection. Sure, I mean, you can call me a hippie. You can call me a hippie if you'd like to. But the point is, if you didn't know that midichlorians existed, if they had never been put into episode 1, you would never know you missed it, because it's so not integral to the story.
You're looking at it as if the Force is just this magic that no one gets, right? And if that's the way that you like it, that's fine. But for them, I would be willing to bet for the majority of people, we need a reason to say why one person can do it and why one person cannot. And then I need a reason that tells me why some Jedi are way more advanced in the Force than others.
Talent. Some people can sing, some people cannot. It has nothing to do with the fact that some people have little creatures living on their vocal cords that help them to sing.
I want to make it known to all of our viewers that producer Mullen loves midichlorians, and he's very unhappy with Jason, his stance on midichlorians.
Okay, we're going to move on before both Jace and Mullen pop a vein. We've discussed ARK Survival Evolved before, but for those of you new to the game, it's an open-world sandbox. Some say it's one of the most innovative titles in gaming at the moment. It features an expansive crafting system and a way to breed and tame dinosaurs. Since our last review, I have actually had a chance to be able to play, and I have to say it is a lot of fun, and you can lose tons of time hunting berries to feed your new Triceratops or meat to tame a T-Rex. So, Base, Roz, I know you guys have both played the game. What would you say are three awesome examples of why someone should get into it?
Well, let me start by first saying, please check your calendar and make sure that you got plenty of time on your hands before you really get into it. Because if you really want to play and enjoy yourself, you need to be committed to it, right? Because that's the one thing that I was like, I want to play. I really like it. I had fun, but then I couldn't get as far as other people because I was like, only an hour, and I wasn't really committed. I was playing Star Wars and other games, but if I was playing just ARK alone, I would have so much fun.
He's exactly right. It's almost like a life simulation. You've got to be able to be to have time to live a second life to put into it. Unless you've got some people that can kind of drag you along, which I did when I played. You know, I was in a couple of different tribes that were very progressed, and you know, could tag me along with it, so that made it a lot easier.
Let's not shine any bad light on it, because the game is fun. The game is so fun. So we're talking about going out into the wilderness and taming dinosaurs, and then once you get you know, some high level dinosaurs that you know that you've ranked up, then you go out there and you can fight higher level dinosaurs and try to kill those dinosaurs to rank you up even more. So I mean, to go out in the wilderness, it's kind of like Jurassic Park almost. So it's pretty awesome.
And they've added a ton of new creatures like dire bears, manta rays, a woolly rhino. Even if you've played the game for a while, there's some new stuff to get into.
Right, and that's a big part of what they're going to keep doing. They're going to keep adding content, keep adding ways to play the game, keep adding creatures to tame. That's a big part of the developer's notion for the game. And one of the cool things that I was just reading about ARK is that the actual, I guess, game isn't really in the game yet. There's going to be a storyline and, you know, a way to, I don't want to call it a campaign because that's probably the wrong word for it, but there is a way to play through a story on the ARK Island or whatever it's called that's not just about kind of pure sandbox. The sandbox stuff is fun. It's got crafting if you want to craft, fighting if you want to fight, taming if you want to tame, or breeding. Hubba. But the bottom line is there's really something for everybody in that game, and it does. I mean, like, you sit down to play, and all of a sudden it's 4 hours later, and you didn't even realize it.
I think the coolest part about it is those aspects like Jace was talking about, like the crafting or the gathering of the materials. Or like, in some games, you don't have to do that. That's all, like, side stuff. Like, this game, you have to do those things, or your character is going to die. Like, that's how real it is. If you don't eat, if you don't sleep, if you don't drink water, like, your character will die. If it's your character's cold, doesn't have enough clothes on, or if it's too hot out there and your character has too many clothes, I mean, that's how realistic this game is. So I think as they add more content and as they bring the story to life, like, this game can only get more fun.
What else has been going on in the... So for those of you who are not aware, Soken actually has our own server.
Yes.
It is open to the public, and everybody is welcome to join. But, I mean, what's been going on the server? I know that there was a big... a couple of the tribes moved up north where you know, somebody was talking about the clothes. You have to wear the heavy clothes to stay warm, and it's pretty challenging up there. What else has been going on the server?
I know that we've had members with their little kangaroos dying. I've been seeing pictures of dead kangaroo babies, which is kind of sad. So, like, if you get a baby animal, you pretty much have to, like, bottle feed the sun gun until it's old enough to fend for itself. So that's kind of depressing to have. I know that I've been reading stuff about making beaver dams. People are starting to get... They added beavers to the game not too terribly long ago, and they're learning how to make a beaver dam.
Can I just say that the baby T-Rexes are adorable?
I liked the baby Argentavis. They were really cute to me.
I mean, to me, I'm all... to me, it's the game, right? I'm about challenge, right, when I play any type of game. So, to me, the funnest thing that the game still has, this biggest attraction to me, is getting on one of your T-Rexes or whatever your big animal is, and going out there and hunting the big daddy, the biggest animal, the biggest dinosaur you can find with three or four of your friends, taking all the supplies that you need out there for a hunt, and picking that dinosaur down and taming them. That's to me, that's what makes the game real.
Okay. What else has been going on?
One thing to point out on the Soken server, there is the ability to make a donation to the server and then have some swag sent your way due to the donation you made. I did happen to make a donation when I was playing and got a little shoulder bird, which was pretty exciting, and I named it Nick Jonas.
I think, you know, if you guys don't mind, I'll share one of my favorite experiences when we were playing the game. So when I first started playing, it was me and Mullen and I think another person, I can't remember who it was at the time, but we decided that we were going to go on a legitimate hunt, like we were settlers. So we went to we stripped down to all of our weapons just except for bow and arrows, and we took just the bare minimum food and water out into the wilderness, and we just walked. We walked outside the gate with all these crazy huge dinosaurs around us, and it was realistic. You felt like you were out there in the wilderness with nothing but this stone arrow to fight off from dinosaurs, and it was kind of scary but kind of exciting at the same time. I mean, we were even attacked by an Alpha Rex, which I think we ended up killing it, but it was like those kinds of experiences in the game when you're just out there walking around in the wilderness and then a dinosaur just jumps on your back, like it's real. It makes you feel like you're in a real Jurassic Park type environment.
Wait, you were able to kill an Alpha Rex?
Well, unfortunately, it was a low Alpha Rex, and Molin was pretty high level at the time, so it didn't. I think he ended up pulling out a different weapon than the bow, but we ended up taking it down. It wasn't fast by any means.
Oh, nice. For those of you who don't know, alpha animals are just mean, and they will eat your face off, so that is pretty impressive, actually, even if it was a low level. As we said before, there is a Soken server. All of the details on how to connect to that Soken server is on the Knights of Soken and the Lords of Soken website, so if you're interested, go ahead and check that out.
Please, really, we're encouraging our community to come check this out. This game, it's going to be huge, especially once the expansion drops. It's going to keep getting better. We actually have our own site for Soken that we created on our engine page. ARK has its own page. You can go there. You can find information on our guild over there, what we're doing, what's coming up, how you get into it, what we can, if you make a donation, what can be purchased, what you can get from purchasing a donation. So please come to the site, check it out, sign up, and join in the fun.
This week, the Lords have 35 events on the calendar, including new PvE and PvP nights, so check those out and shoot either Zorov questions for PvE and Abgren questions for PvP. We have a lot of congratulations to go around this week for Lords, particularly congrats to Zarin and Rentava for being our top recruiters for the last week. Congrats to our newest Lord, Lord Agad. And a big, huge congratulations to our three new junior officers, Darth Zorov, Darth Verosk, and Darth Draenen. Welcome to all of you. For Clan Soken, we have two new officers, Tara and Arroya. Welcome to that. And just a reminder, anybody Lord or Knight and below can join Clan Soken for their Mandalorian RP. What's going on in the Knights, Jace?
Well, first of all, I want to give a personal thanks to a few people. First of all, to Val, who is our sound designer for the podcast here in the last several episodes. It takes a whole lot of personal time to put an episode together, and she's doing a fantastic job. I want to give a big thanks to the Academy instructors who give of their personal RP time to teach classes in the Knights of Soken. Like, you know, we push that a lot. We do a lot of classes in a week. You do 3 or 4 classes every day, sometimes 5 classes a day. So that's a lot of people doing a lot of work to make Knights of Soken go. I appreciate it, and it is does not go unnoticed. We want to give a big shout out to Orisom, Briani, and Opulus Prime for getting knighted. So fantastic job. We spent some time in the Hall of Knighthood, and before they went out into the Circle of the Council and got knighted. That was pretty cool.
Right.
Okay, and here's the big one. Roz, you want to say the big one?
Well, I mean, I think we should do it together. Like, I'll do a part, then you do a part. How
okay.
does that sound?
That sounds good.
So, Jason and I would like to extend our personal
congratulations.
Personal shout out. Big, huge congratulations.
To
the newest
council members of the Knights of Soken,
Lockie and
Yosef.
Congratulations, guys.
That is so awesome. Lockie, we've been courting Lockie to be on the council for a while. She's amazing, does amazing work. And, of course, Yosef, the most popular dude in the whole guild. Everybody loves little Yosef Baladeshi.
Yeah, so great for those two. Well-deserved, and we look for great things for you guys.
We have about 65 events coming up on the calendar this week. We did reschedule the pod race. Stay tuned to find out exactly when that's going to happen. We want to make sure that there's plenty of space and time for the Clan Soken to get in there along with Lords and Knights. But, you know, Knights of Soken is rocking and rolling just like usual. We're a busy, busy bunch of people.
You know, I think that's brought us to a time in the show where I think this is it, right? This is the last episode.
Yeah,
for the
this
season.
Is it. The season three. Put it in the can. Put it away. It's a kind of a bittersweet moment for me. This is my second season on the podcast. It's been a fun season. It's been kind of a crazy season. Very, very a lot of dynamic things happening this season. It wasn't very steady. It was a lot of like big moments and you know, yeah.
A lot of changes too. I mean, this is my first season on the podcast, so it was really cool. I thank you guys for having me here. It was a blast. I've enjoyed every night we recorded. It was awesome.
Yeah, hope to see you again.
Yeah, this was my first season as well, and I really do appreciate everybody letting me host a little bit.
But I mean,
we love
obviously,
Blue.
But most importantly, thank you to the people, the listeners, and our viewers, and the ones who tune in weekly to hear our beautiful voices.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to me.
Well, thank you everybody for joining us this season. We will be back in the beginning of May for season 4. For Blue, Jace, and Roz, this is Soken.
Stay classy, Soken.
Thanks for tuning in to the Knights of Soken podcast. Please click the subscribe button below and follow us on Twitter at Knights of Soken. And look us up on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Knights of Soken.